Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast. One of the great things about life is when you feel like you've learned something important and new. And today is one of those days for me, hopefully for you too. We're diving into the world of industrial IoT, very important area, very significant area. And we're going to be talking to the CEO of a company called Trumpf Tracking Technologies GmbH. Ebhard Wald is the managing director and the founder of this division of Trumpf, spelt with an F at the end. They are a very significant German industrial company, pioneered all sorts of things, numerical machines to in manufacturing, makers of heavy-duty laser equipment that's used in semiconductors. And as a result of this incredible industrial powerhouse, they saw the need for real-time location systems. They dived into that and, given their perspective, saw some major gaps in terms of standards. And they filled them and created something called OmLox, which we're going to be learning a lot about. And this is something that is very significant in industrial IoT. It's got a lot of traction in Europe, but less visibility over here in the States. So I think this is an important open standard that you need to know about if you're into asset tracking, indoor location. It has really broad application. Its sweet spot started off in ultra wideband, but it encompasses other technologies like Bluetooth as well. So there's a lot that it's important to know about. And we've got the world's expert on this talking with us. So I hope you enjoy the conversation.
The Mr. Beacon podcast is sponsored by Wiliot. Intelligence for everyday things, powered by IoT Pixels.
Ebsi, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
I'm happy to be here and I'm very curious about your questions.
Well, I'm curious about your answers. I have to confess that the Mr. Beacon podcast has really been focused on supply chain, retail IoT, and maybe consumer IoT to a lesser extent. We haven't done industrial IoT its justice, and I think we have a real opportunity talking to you to do that. So we're going to be talking about Industry 4.0, industrial IoT. You have been right at the center of a very interesting standard in this area, an RTLS standard called OmLox. So I'm looking forward to diving into that. But maybe before we go there, we should set the stage and explain a bit about the company, that the division that you are CEO of sits. So the company's called Trumpf, spelt with an F at the end. What is the origin of the company? What does the broader company do? I've been watching videos last night, and I had I'm a geek, so I loved what I saw. Some of the devices you're making, lasers that cut through things, which is awesome. I'm thinking James Bond, scenes from James Bond movies now. What does Trumpf do?
Well, I think the simplest way to approach Trumpf is to look at it as a high-tech company. And it has continuously changed over time. So if you look back, let's say some decades, you would look at Trumpf as a company being just a technology leader in sheet metal manufacturing, with doing the nicest punching machines, but also with innovating laser cutting machines, like you mentioned. If you look at Trumpf nowadays, after a continuous kind of innovation and new product launch, we are also number one in high power lasers for any kind of crazy applications, whatever you can basically think of where you can really use high power lasers. In fancy things like protection from lighting, for example, lightning, and let's also do low power applications like VCSELs for applications similar to face ID recognition and those kind of topics. So we went from a sheet metal machinery company to a company who had their own semiconductor fabs, doing their own kind of laser products directly from the wafer up to dozens of kilowatt of laser power. And we also innovated in areas which were, accepted or expected to be totally impossible. So one example is, nowadays everyone is talking about a shortage in semiconductors. And the new fabs, they are all produced based on EUV, extreme ultraviolet lights in the lithography system. And there's only one company being able to supply the beam source for that, which is Trumpf. So today I would say, besides being number one in sheet metal machinery, we are also probably one of the number one in semiconductor manufacturing technologies. And in some areas, really the only choice which is there to supply those kind of machineries. And that's very important if you approach Trumpf. So it's not like you can put us into, a corner and say, that's exactly what you do. We're always looking for new things. And we have quite some other new kind of endeavors active, like we are a family-owned company, and the family says, okay, we want to be number one in quantum computing. And I know this sounds strange in your ears, where in US there are companies like Google and IBM fighting for it, and we are a small family-owned business. But we believe in that. So we invest in our own quantum computing technology, and we really do that. We have a startup, and it's fully funded by the family money. And the other things, and that's what I do, is changing the way how industrial IoT works from, a more proprietary closed system where you buy a monolithic solution to a standardized system which will allow a mix-and-match approach. And this is driven by the same company, by the same family, and it's the only thing driving that is the will, the very strong commitment for innovation.
And you mentioned, small family company relative to some of the trillion-dollar giants, but how big is Trumpf?
So basically, we just, 4 billion revenue per year in euro. That's roughly the size. So I'm not allowed, our fiscal year ended end of June, so I'm not allowed to tell you the numbers of the last fiscal year, which is just some weeks old. So again, the order income has increased. So it's roughly 4 billion. That's probably a good number.
And number of employees, how many people in the company?
Let's put about 14,000.
Substantial enterprise. And before we move on, I do want to get into the RTLS IoT space, but just complete the picture a bit. Talk a bit about some of the markets that you serve, the kind of companies that are buying your products. You talked about one, the semiconductor space. That was fascinating, but it's a lot bigger than that, isn't it? It's like I'll let you describe it.
Yeah, so exactly one of the companies, one big customer of us is ASML. You know ASML, it's one of the biggest equipment manufacturer for semiconductor fabs. And they buy the EUV source from us. It's one example, so that's one of our customers. And in this high technology area, we're the only one being able to supply this kind of beam source. So in the sheet metal machinery, we are supplying machinery, let's say, to any kind of chop shop or product shop globally. So it could be General Motors, or it could be just the sheet metal chop shop just around the corner with 5 employees, and they make nice products by using our punching machine. So this is far, let's say, there's a huge variety in this kind of topics. We are also serving different markets, like we have low-power lasers like VCSELs, for example. They can be put into smartphone for, let's say, small LiDAR scanners. Let's say a possible application could be like a face ID recognition, just to give you an idea where also Trumpf technology could be behind it. And this is just a small example of what we are serving.
Yeah, and so Germany is synonymous with high quality, very strong manufacturing. And it seems like Trumpf is right at the center of that. You're producing the equipment that allows that manufacturing to happen. And you know, one of the innovations I think that you were on the forefront of was numerically controlled machines, you know, taking the cutting of and forming of things from something that was done by eye to actually programming it, which is, I mean, where would we be without that? That's amazing.
Absolutely. It's nowadays it sounds like such a normal product, but at that time it was just a pure innovation driven by us. And it's like always, if you look back at groundbreaking innovations which happened 20 years ago, those sound like so normal today. So I also like often compare it with when later on we might talk about Omnox as a new standard for location. If you just look back 20 years, you will see that at that time, Wi-Fi was something brand new and only known for some, let's say, freaks. And nowadays it's so common. And that's exactly, you know, when the innovation is real, it's just a very normal thing, exactly like you said, with a CNC laser cutting machine. It's just such a normal product, but it was a tremendously change in industry. And that's always what's coming with real innovations.
So tracking technologies, it doesn't take a genius to guess how, one of the biggest, most powerful, influential, pioneering manufacturing firms might need to track assets, do real-time location. But tell us about the division that you're CEO of, this subsidiary.
So there's a nice story behind it. Basically, when we wanted to drive industrial IoT, the main goal was pure customer benefit driven. So we wanted our customers to get a more efficient production site, which needs a lot of transparency. We talk about the digital shadow. In order to generate a digital shadow, you need to know the status of everything inside your factory. And the most important thing you have to know is about anything which can move. If you don't know where those things are, you will never have a digital shadow. Very easy thing. So again, if you think about that, you will easily understand, okay, you need somehow a real-time location system. So this was, I don't know, roughly a decade ago when this was clear to us. And at that time, we just thought, okay, why not? That's nice. This technology is already around. Let's use it. We digged into this kind of topics and found a lot of companies already being active in this field. So one of it is, for example, Ubisense. Some others, which is well known in US, is Zebra. They have UWB systems already around for quite some time. The problem is all those kind of products, they are fully proprietary. And as we looked for a solution for all of our customers, it was a clear no-go that you would take any kind of those proprietary solutions and bring this lock-in to your 25,000 customers. So it was just discussed internally, but we said, okay, we never did it, and we will never build a lock-in for our customer to a supplier of us. And we were totally astonished at that time that there was no open system. And that was basically when we said, okay, we have to build up an open standard. And I tried to approach all the players, and I basically went to all of them. And you probably name them all. Whenever you think about who played a role in RTLS, I probably knocked at their door quite years ago and told them, okay, couldn't you just agree on one common standard? And if they would just have said, yes, it's a good idea, well, the story would have ended. But basically, they told us, no, we will not do it because we like that there's a, well, they didn't tell they like that there's a vendor login. They didn't put it in these words. But at the end of the day, that was more or less what they said. It's in, they like this kind of business model. And we then looked up the numbers and we found that there, at that time, there were more than 1,000 proprietary companies building real-time location system based on UWB. And then I went to them and said, look, it's kind of crazy. There are 1,000 of you out there. Why do you think that you're the next Apple? It's impossible that there will be 1,000 next Apple. And then all of them which I asked told me, you're right. The other 999, they will fail, but I will be the next Apple. And at some point, you give up to trying to convince them to agree on a standard. And then I went back to the family, to the company owner, the family, and said, I don't know. It's, for me, it's a real surprise, but they all think they can do it in a proprietary way. And then the family said, okay, if it's like that, then we might just have, just to convince them, push the open standard and do the first implementation, just as a demonstration. And that's basically how it all started. So there was, at that time, not even the slightest idea of a business model for us behind it. The only reason for doing the first implementation of this open standard was to convince the existing players to say, look, it's there, do it. And this was quite some years ago. And then the standard was there, and then there happened something which was not, let's say, foreseen by us. We thought then that once the standard is there and people can see it, that, let's say, the existing player will basically join and then we can retreat from this kind of topic and leave it to them because this is their market, not ours. And the good story is, yes, this basically happened. So all the big European companies, in the meantime, they joined Omlock. So Ubisense, Kinexon, Siemens, and you name them all. They are all members of Omlock. So that's quite nice. So and I don't know to what extent, but we know that they are more or less developing now according to the standard. When the products will come, I don't know. But then something else happened. If you look at the business literature, you will find the five forces of Porter. And Porter always said there's a, let's say, the competition inside a market, but there can also be new entrants. And the surprising thing, well, later on, it's not a real surprise, but the surprising thing for us was when the standard was there, there were a totally different segment of companies became interested in this real-time location technology. I just name one example. It's telecommunication providers. What is their business model? Basically, the business model of a company like AT&T and Verizon is they invest some billions, they build up wireless communication networks, and they rent it to everyone on a monthly basis. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. Now, they never did it for location, but they couldn't do it because there was no standard. Now, there is a standard with Omlocks, and you know, we were some kind of overwhelmed by their reaction. So they approached us and they told us, look, now there's a standard. Basically, we could just do the same thing. Instead of investing some money for a communication wireless network, we can invest the money for a location network because now there's a standard. And we can then, again, rent it to anyone. And, you know, the end devices, they can come from anywhere, from China or whatever. And they came to us and said, look, it looks like you did the first implementation. Do you want to serve us? And this was kind of, ooh, this was not foreseen. And well, there was not only telecommunication companies, it was also, let's say, from existing building infrastructure companies, so companies who already serve the building business with their technology infrastructure. So like the number one in lighting, or let's say really market leaders in Wi-Fi access points. So they said, why not including the standard in the Wi-Fi access point already? Which will make the overall total cost of ownership for the end customers dramatically cheaper. And now, guess what? So I went back to the family and said, okay, officially the plan was that we just do it for demonstration and then we retreat. But now there are multi-billion companies knocking on our door and asking if we can help them now because there's a standard to join this market. What should we do? And then this was basically the starting of the company. Peter Leibinger just said, okay, well, if they take this for serious, okay, let's make a business out of it. Are you up to it? And I thought about it and I said, okay, yes, let's do it. And that's how this company started. So it's like now the existing player in RTLS, they are still there and they start now to develop and will come out with Omlox compliant products, I don't know, sometime soon or later. And there were also new entrants and they are, some of them are supported by us. At the end of the day, I'm kind of sure now that this will bring down the costs of indoor location dramatically.
Fascinating story. And it's so funny that the initial reaction was no. For very human reasons, we all think we're destined for great things and we're going to be the winner. But, you know, you look at other industries, you know, where would the internet be without standards? You know, if we didn't have HTTP and that sort of thing, where would the database industry be without the SQL standard? And I think, you know, anyone that's looking strategically at a market and they recognize that they want it to take off, then they should acknowledge that standards have a role. And you know, if you can compete, the strategies for working with standards, you can still add value. So I'm glad that you persisted. So what is the business model of the tracking technologies, Trumpf Tracking Technologies GmbH, the company that you founded?
So basically, the business model is very simple. So we support the companies, like I mentioned, like, for example, Deutsche Telekom, as a telecommunication provider, I'm allowed to name them. I'm not allowed to name the other companies.
T-Mobile and all that sort of T-Systems. And
exactly. So those are customers of us. And then again, like lighting companies or Wi-Fi access point companies, they are customers of us and we support them in whatever they need. So it's you know, as Omlox is an open standard, anyone can build Omlox products. So that's very clear. No need to get a support from us. But it's like a very normal thing these days that everyone understood, I cannot do everything. So if you want to use a cloud service, you will basically rely on AWS or Azure or whatever you do. And then you get some other stacks from other companies because it's everything is so complicated. You can't do everything. And now our customers, they say, okay, we do want to join this this location market are now based on the standard. And it's very different what they take from us. So some of them, they just want be consulted. Some others, they want to license some kind of software. Some others, they say, okay, can you give us some blueprints for some kind of hardware? So we do everything, which helps also to get it done faster and which is, let's say, in the benefit of the standard. So it's not like this is exactly what you have to take from us. We support those new entrants to get them a head start with their Omlox offerings, whatever they need. Okay. That's basically what we do.
So consulting, blueprints for hardware and software. So how does your software fit relative to you know, the players like Ubisense? So we had Ubisense's CTO on the podcast a few months ago. Are you competing with them or how does that work?
So basically, Omlox itself, by itself, it's a pure standard. So it's nothing else. There's no implementation. It's just a standard. And it's owned by a non-profit organization. And Ubisense also, in the meantime, is a member of this organization. So they are also owning part of the standard, if you put it like that way. By the way, there are 1,700 members. And looking at this, anyone can do Omlox, and I'm kind of sure also at some point you will find Omlox products from Ubisense. And it's always like that if you have a standard. At the end of the day, a Wi-Fi product from, let's say, Cisco will look similar to a certain extent like from HP Aruba or from Ubiquiti. It's 100% identical for interoperability. So in this way, you will then be able to take a tech from company A and use it with the infrastructure from company B, just like with Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. That's a very normal thing. So in this way, it could be that Ubisense is developing the same thing based on the standard. But again, the difference is in the implementation. So if you look at Wi-Fi access points, you will find a lot of arguments why, for example, Cisco will claim that their Wi-Fi access points are better than the ones from HP Aruba. And vice versa. It's very normal. And it's allowed. So they can even have different data rates. So there's still a lot of freedom. The only thing which is 100% defined is interoperability. So they all will work together with your Apple phone or with your Samsung phone or whatever kind of mobile device you have, your Dell computer. And in the same way, this will then happen in the standard. So I assume that at some point, Ubisense will sell Omnox-compliant products, and so will Siemens do, and also our customers do. And what we basically do, we help the new entrants to get into this market. That's one thing. I'm not sure how far, let's say, Ubisense or Siemens is with the Omnox standard. They could probably do the same. They could also help, let's say, Deutsche Telekom to do that. But as we kind of, we were the driving force behind it, there's one thing which is really appreciated by our customers is because we started at a point where the others were still reluctant for the standard, we have a time advantage. And that's basically what is our main difference so far.
Okay. So you are competing with other members. Tell us a bit more about your offering, and then I will. There's lots of questions I have about the standard, but let's go into that. So, what are the software products that you sell? And do you sell hardware as well? Are you selling ultra wideband transmitters, receivers, tags, locators?
So, it's also a funny thing. It's again like when you build up a business plan, what you intend to do, and finally what you find yourself, what you do at the end. So with the business plan, basically the idea was that the knowledge is in consulting and the knowledge is basically in blueprints and it's in software, like firmware, because that's basically when you have the implementation of the standard, it's basically you can transfer it with a piece of software or firmware. And we thought that's basically the core of it, which will help the companies to get up to speed. And we were not thinking really about supplying hardware at that point. Again, it evolved differently. And this is due to the supply shortage. Because at that time, let's say those companies, they ask us, okay, that's very nice that you help us getting to speed here with the software, but could you also supply the hardware? And, you know, I'm personally convinced the only reason why they asked for the hardware is because nobody loves to do hardware at the moment because it's just a mess with the supply chain shortages. So although we never intended to become a hardware seller, we basically did it. And we do it. And that's another thing. So it's really sometimes surprising how your business plan evolves over time. And the customer can get hardware elements from us, they can get firmware, they can get software, they can get consulting. And it depends what they like. And if they like to do the software by themselves, they can do the software by themselves. If they like to do the hardware by themselves, they can do the hardware by themselves. As I said again, it's a standard. So whenever they think they can do it by themselves, they can do it by themselves. There's nothing which will hinder them to do it.
Very good. And the tags that you sell, are they ultra wideband tags?
They are the tags which we sell, they are Omnox compliant. So look at it like a Bluetooth. It's also a standard, and the same is like with Omnox, it's a standard, so they are Omnox compliant. Now if you dig a little bit deeper and look into the Omnox A interface standard, you will find that there are two kind of wireless technologies inside the specification. One is UWB, and it's based on the same IEEE specification like used in the smartphone industry. It's IEEE 802.15.4c. And the other one is basically, let's say, in-band communication in 2.4 gigahertz space. And that's how OMLOX is defined as an air interface. It allows you for identification of an object, a location of an object, and you have a small, very low bandwidth communication channel also in the 2.4 gigahertz area. So with this infrastructure of OMLOX inside, OMLOX will by no means compete with Wi-Fi. You know, this is a total different in kind of communications. But you can also have a extremely low bandwidth, let's say 1 bit or several bits of information exchange between your thousands of mobile devices, which also comes with the standard. So technology-wise, it's UWB and, let's say, something like Zigbee inside the standard.
Okay. So if I have a company that makes Bluetooth tags or Bluetooth locator hubs that read the tags, that's OMLOX is not something that I can conform to. This is really a standard for companies that have UWB, ultra-wideband RTLS systems.
No, and I thought about that. It's always the way how you approach OMLOX first. There are, let's say, two faces to the coin here also with OMLOX. Mm-hmm. Again, as I said, OMLOX always was driven by the customer benefit. So we looked at the mess mm-hmm. they had in the factory with all the, let's say, the isolated location technology and the missing standard. And we said, okay, we want to clean this mess so that any kind of factory owner can just do a simple mix and match. And it's always was defined for the pure benefit of the factory owner. So there was not at that time not this business model behind of it with of what we do. Mm-hmm. And again, we are only one of 1,700 members of OMLOX. And OMLOX is definitely also very helpful if you are a Bluetooth location technology provider. Why is that? If you look at the factory owner point of view, you will see that if you do want to care about location, you will have different kind of location sources. And yes, there's some reasons why you might want to use a Bluetooth location sources, or you might want to use a GPS location sources outdoors, or you would like to use 5G location data. And all this does make sense, and we fully understand it. And that's why inside the standard, we also defined a middle layer, which we call OMLOX Hub, in which all this location data from different sources is transformed into one coordinate system with a defined behavior and then transmitted via a standardized JSON REST API to the application area. And in this way, it allows that any kind of location-based application is fully technology agnostic and vendor independent. So this will also totally transform, let's say, the location based app marketplace. You can build up a marketplace like, let's say, a Google Play Store now for location-based apps based on that. And any kind of Bluetooth location provider can just plug into this OMLOX Hub, and any kind of app consuming data is fully independent of where it's coming from. And now you could say, why you still need the air interface? The point is, when you look at what you want to do in this kind of factory, you would now say, okay, now I have different location technologies and I have one coordinate system, but you still have a problem if you do want to bring in a new device. So there's a need to have inside your factory this one coordinate system physically persistent in your room. And that's basically what's defined with the OMLOX air interface. So let's put it that way. If you get a full OMLOX stack, you can add in GPS, 5G, Bluetooth. By the way, also maps which come out of an HEV with their own SLAM, they can all put into that and transform into one coordinate system. But this one coordinate system, which is valid for your factory, is also persistent in your room, which means at some point you can buy a power tool for fastening a bolt, and inside a power tool, OMLOX is already included, just like Wi-Fi is included in your Apple smartphone. And there will be no integration effort, and you will not need any kind of technicians, because it will automatically show up on the Omnox hub in the next second. And any kind of app can consume it and automatically document what you do with this device. And there's zero integration effort. And in order to do that, you do need a persistent coordinate system standardized. And that's why we define the Omnox A interface.
Excellent.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
So I love that vision of buying a power tool, and I'm sure factory owners love the idea, or construction sites. I imagine this would be very relevant for construction sites where you are keeping track of these assets. So the hub is agnostic of the radio technologies that are used. But it seems like in the case of UWB, there's more specifications. So you have more depth for the UWB arm than maybe for a Bluetooth tag vendor.
And there's a reason for that. A Bluetooth is already a standardized interface. So that's fully standardized.
Yes.
You have interoperability in Bluetooth. That's fine. I don't see why we should invest any second in that.
Yes.
This was not existent before in UWB. That's one thing. The other thing is, there's a reason why companies like Apple choose to include UWB in their smartphone, although Bluetooth was already there. And this is not because you can't do location with Bluetooth. It's just in critical situations, like especially in non-line of sight conditions, UWB is, and you can prove this physically, far more stable. And that's why UWB shows up in all the Apple products, and this is why UWB shows up in cars and in a lot of other things. And that's why when we thought about what could be the right technology inside a factory to make the coordinate system persistent, you cannot rely on a line of sight technology. You have to take the most robust one. And the funny thing is, at that time, you know, we had a group of engineers looking for the most reliable technology for non-line of sight conditions inside an industrial space. And now we know that at the same time, Apple was having the same kind of question for consumer, and both teams ended up with the same answer. Unfortunately, Tim Cook did not tell me about that. If not, we could have already streamlined the physical level before, but he did not inform me, so, which was a little bit of pity, but that's basically what it was. So it was a similar question: what is the most reliable and robust technology in critical conditions? And it's easy. Any kind of technology group, after investigating this topic, will come up with the answer. It will be UWB, and that's why it's in the Apple smartphone, and that's why it's in the Omnox standard. And now, if UWB at that time would have already been standardized, we would again just used this one, but there was no air interface standard at that time. That's why we said, okay, then that's the other thing we have to do. Let's solve it, because that was our task. We want to clean up this mess.
Okay. So I spent a lot of time talking to the Bluetooth world. And so I've always admired ultra wideband, and I think it has, it's obviously flourishing. I kind of personally believe that this is probably not going to be, there's no one perfect technology for every thing. And so it's important to have a toolkit, and full disclosure, I work for a Bluetooth tag company. So how would I, as a Bluetooth tag vendor, support this standard? I believe in the philosophy, and I kind of understand that at a transport level, then I can use
the Bluetooth standard, and that still allows me to talk to this Omlox hub. How does how would a an Estimote or a Contact IO or a company or even a Wiliot, how would we support the Omlox standard if we wanted to join in?
It's extremely easy. The API is described how this will be integrated into the Omlox hub, and you just fulfill the API. At the moment, this is not fully done. There will be a certification for this interface, so where you then can also apply to get a Omlox certificate for this interface, so that the customer is convinced, okay, if I buy this product, I don't need to fuss about it and have a lot of work. I can just plug it in and it will run. And that's the simplest way. And then you can plug in your Bluetooth location service easily. And I fully agree, again, that it's not like one technology will do it all. It will not be that way. There will also be room for RFID and other things. And that's the nice thing about the Omlox Hub. No matter where the information is coming from, it will, let's say, track one trackable as an object, and you can add to one trackable a different location technology. So you could put the Omlox Air tag on it, you could put the Wiliot Bluetooth on it, and you could put a GPS receiver on it, and you could put all of them on it, and they will then be combined in the Omlox Hub. It's the same object with the same trackable ID, and any application on top of the Omlox Hub will not know that, let's say, in this second the location data comes from GPS, in the other second it's come from Bluetooth, and now it's in another place it comes from Omlox. It doesn't have to care about it. It will, no matter where you are, it will always get the best kind of location information. And this makes it so simple because you get it totally seamless.
That's interesting. So how far does the standard go? What are the, tell us a bit more about the hub interface. So presumably, is it like an X, Y, and Z location? How do you, or is it more logical? It's in the... it's in this room, in this bin. How do you transmit this location information? How do you define it?
Again, we're fully driven by the customer benefit. So in total, we now collected close to 250 different use cases. And we looked how we can fulfill all of them. And then we understood that, for example, what does the hub have to do. So one thing he has to do is basically transform it into one coordinate system. We also understood that to get really globally seamless tracking, you also have to transform it into WGS84, so into longitude, latitude. And that's also something which is in the standard. And other things we understood is that you distinguish, as I mentioned, between trackable and provider zones. And the next thing which we found by looking at all the use cases is that we have to include an event management for geofences into this hub area for the simple reason that for a lot of topics, different kind of applications will act on the same event, like if you enter a geofence. Like a geofence could, for example, give you a trigger for a booking. It could also give you a trigger for starting a machine. It could give a data flow information for storing something. It could be the same geofence event. And that's why we said, okay, then this geofence event has to be inside the Omlox hub so that the applications of on top of it, they can just consume it and they will get the same trigger for the same geofence. And by the way, this geofence is independent of the zones. So you can build a geofence, and a part of the geofence, it could happen that you get a trigger by GPS on the other side, by the Omlox core zone on the other side by Bluetooth. It's always just, let's say, a global geofence. That's it. It's also this geofence and the event is totally technology agnostic. And this is basically then what the Omlox hub is doing. So we designed it in a way that really the application level is above and that everything you need in between, which is one coordinate system, longitude, latitude, common event handling is done in this layer. And anyone can build this Omlox hub, by the way. There are already different kind of companies supplying it.
Interesting. Okay, I think I understand that. So I can see how that would be very valuable for assets, nuts, bolts, screws, components, machines. What about perishable products, medicine and food? Do you have a way of sharing, you know, the condition, the temperature, that sort of sensing information, as well as the coordinates? Is that part of the standard yet?
Yeah. That's a nice question. Again, as I mentioned, Omlox is a community, so we have working groups and companies meet and they discuss the use cases. And for sure, at some point, let's put it that way, you define this air interface and you say this is pure location, and then there will be some company saying, look, all I want is that in this tag, I want to switch on a light. When someone is searching for it, it's only a light, so this is not really communication, mm-hmm. it's just a one-bit information. So you say, okay, yes, it makes sense. So you discuss about it, and then there's someone else saying, look, I would like to do a power tool, and all I want to know is when the power pool is on. And this is only a one-bit information. So it's not really communication. And at the end of the day, you discover that you have an uplink data communication and a downlink data communication. You have a bidirectional data communication. It's, yes, only low bandwidth, but it's basically there. Because we did not close the door totally. If you don't close it totally, mm-hmm. it's partly mm-hmm. open by definition. And it's like that, because and we had a lot of discussion in the working group. So basically, this kind of information is tunneled in the Omlox hub and in the Omlox air interface, and you can transfer extremely low bandwidth tunnel data. Now, there will be probably fairly enough a question for what is the bandwidth, and here at the moment, we are really struggling with the value what we put in the specification. So if you would come up with this kind of question, the answer would be, this is exactly under discussion now in the working groups.
Mm, very interesting. So, I mean, you could go from that. I can see you could end up segueing into electronic shelf labels where there's a real, you know, flow of data and you want to know where the shelf labels are, but where does the standard begin and end and how do you accommodate other standards? I guess standards are never done, are they? And it sounds like, you know, if I look at one of the most successful standards, Bluetooth, then... they have a myriad of working groups and so there's...
Exactly.
Can you speak briefly about the working group structure? How many working groups are there? What are the things that you're working on?
Okay, so if we look, let's say, from the workflow, then I'm head of the working group use case, which is basically where everything starts. So we're collecting all these kind of use cases and we go out to the customers, we get in discussions and we describe it in the standardized way. What does the customer want to do? And then we structure them and build clusters and do it like that. We have different target markets here in use case, like industry, warehousing, healthcare, retail, and so on. And we collect them and cluster them into different kind of target markets. Then we check what is needed in order to fulfill this kind of use cases, and we hand then these high level requirements over to two different working groups. One is the working group Omlox Hub, which is defining this API and this Omlox Hub behavior according to our specification derived from the use cases. And the other one is the working group Omlox Core Zone, which is defining the specification for the air interface. For the persistent coordinate system inside the room. And everything is driven by these use cases. And that, if at some point you will have time to read the specification, you will see that it's probably more complicated than you would expect it to be. But it's due to the fact that this is a multi-purpose infrastructure and you have dozens and hundreds of companies bringing in their requirements. At the end, it is not that simple as you might think it could be, because you know, one for location, for example, one use case says I want to locate something very accurately, and then you have to define a mode which is doing this on the server. Another says, yes, I want to locate on the server where the mobile device is, but I want to do it extremely energy efficient, even if it's not that accurate. Okay, so it's another location standard in the same infrastructure, and then the AGV comes or the drone comes and says, I want to do a self location. And I want to get it at a fixed update rate because I want to do anti-collision. And there must be no load in the system. So you end up, okay, this is now then, you can call it downlink TDOA other direction. And then someone will say, yes, it's a good idea, but I want to do it fully anonymous. And so that no one even knows that I do it. And then the next one says, okay, anonymous is fine, but you have to control it, and so on, you know. That's exactly how those discussions goes on. And so far for the interface, really it works and it's all specified. All those modes are in parallel. Which you can easily imagine the system is not extremely simple. but it's fully multi-purpose capable.
Yeah. And how? Where is the standard in terms of its progress and maturity? How long has OmLocks been around for? Give us a sense of that.
Yeah, it's a nice question. I think I mentioned earlier that we were defining this standard in parallel where some teams at Apple were defining their AirTags and their kind of location technology. And as I said again, unfortunately, Tim Cook never told me about it. And this is really, this has an effect on the timeline. Mm-hmm. Because basically, we were ready with our specification, everything done on UWB. And at that time, Apple came out with their products. And then we had a discussion inside the community with all the members, because we understood Apple is a game changer. We thought, you know, we're the only one. We define the only global standard for UWB, but you cannot neglect if Apple is there. Mm-hmm. And then we understood that Apple is defining their own proprietary products, and later on, based on what Apple is doing, the complete global industry met, and they were defining the physical layer in IEEE standard, IEEE 802.15.4c. As this happened after Apple did his market entry, and as Tim Cook, as I said, never told me about his activities, the first OmLock standard was defined independently of this IEEE standard. We could not be aware of that. Which means we then had a member voting, and the member said, okay, by no means Apple and Samsung will follow what we define in industry. If we want to get a cost down and use the same chipset, we have to follow their kind of chipset definition. And this means that the answer is OmLocks is already there. You can buy it, no problem. On the OmLocks Hub side, it's a continuous evolution. It's totally nice, no problem. On the air interface, there is one step where there's some kind of a disruption. So there's OmLocks Core Zone version 1, which was defined before this IEEE thing after Apple happened. And there's now the OmLocks Core Zone version 2, which is on the physical layer, fully compatible on the chipset side, like with Apple and Samsung and all the other, the consumer devices, so in order to bring the costs down. For sure, by definition, if you do something like that, the compatibility between these two levels are not there. Mm-hmm. By definition, because we had to do a jump, you know, on what Apple defined. Mm-hmm. So this is something you normally would never do if you have a standard. You would always say, I have an evolution with an upside and downlink compatibility. But here we said, okay, we're still early enough, and the penetration rate is still not that high, so we switch to the new physical layer and go to OmLocks version 2. And that's why the situation today is like, okay, OmLocks 1 is there, but every company, they develop their products now in OmLocks version 2. And as OmLocks version 2 is specified, but it took some time, you know, after we understood what Apple and Samsung is doing. Mm-hmm. We expect that the OmLocks version 2 products, and they will be the products which will then be there for the mass market, and they will most likely emerge in volume in 2023.
And I assume Apple is not a member of OmLocks, but it sounds like you've made OmLocks 2 you know, with an eye to aligning with the de facto standards that they ended up driving. Is that correct or not?
This is correct. At the time, in the meantime, it looks like that if you look at the global picture, there are some associations and some topics where all the players meet. So Omlox is representing the UWB technology in the industry. And so, for example, these times everyone knows each other. So still, if Apple will do something new, Tim Cook will not inform me, that's for sure. But now at least we're in a way that if you look at what's going on in IEEE, so people from Omlox meet with people from Apple and, you know, other associations, like, for example, a car connectivity consortium. So you might be aware that, let's say, if you buy a BMW these days, you don't have to get a physical key anymore. You can get use your Apple smartphone as a key. And in order to prevent a man-in-the-middle attack, this is protected by UWB, which means there's also, let's say, a standard which has to be defined for the car, to connect the car with the smartphone. This is the Car Connectivity Consortium, another association. And they also define interoperability and UWB on the same lower level. So let's put it that way. These days, we have the big associations like Omlox, CCC, and there's basically FIRA left, and then there's Apple, and they meet now in the IEEE, or let's say, if you have regulation topics like FCC and those kind of, where we now join forces and everyone knows each other and things are defined and now driven under mutual agreement.
How many years has Omlox been going?
So the start was, it's now 6.5 years ago. Omlox went public mid of 2020. The working took place under a different name. And once everything was proven and the first products were ready, we went public in mid 2020.
Cool. And 1,700 members is a good, that's a great base of participants. And I'm assuming that includes manufacturers as well as potential users of the technology as well.
So I have to be, I would like to be more precise on this number. So Omlox is part of a non-profit organization. And there are four committee streams in this non-profit organization. One is Profibus, Profinet, IO-Link, and Omlox. And they are all handled by the same organization. And this organization does have in total 1,700 members, and they all own all those standards together. So if you're a member of this organization, you're partly of an owner of Omlox and of Profibus and of Profinet, all of it, because it's one organization. So the companies, if not, we would never be able to define any kind of upgrade of the standard if you would have to discuss everything with 1,700. So let's say the one actively in all the working groups, it's like always in the world. At the end of the day, you end up with some dozens of companies who finally drive it and some other hundreds who use it and consume it.
Yeah.
And that's basically it.
No, that makes sense. So it's like Bluetooth has 30,000 members, but they're not defining the standard. They're just
exactly.
Adopting it. So do you have a certification process? So, you know, Wiliot decides it's going to comply to the Omlox standard. We join, we download the specs, we start to change our cloud service so that we can return these coordinates. Is there an audit process or is it self-certification? How does that work?
Yes, and that reminds me that unfortunately I did not finish to answer your last question about the working group. So as we said, we have the working group use case, we have the working group core zone, we have the working group hub, and we also have the working group testing. And the working group testing is defining this kind of testing process and certification process. They are not done with all this kind of certificates at the moment. So at the moment, if like Williard wants to get a certificate for, let's say, connecting to the Omlox hub, the answer would be it's in progress. And the way this is handled is that an external company in an RFQ was asked, so everyone could apply, to write this test suite for the certification process. And the bid was done, and the company is selected, but the development is not done, so the software is not yet there. And once the software is there, you can check after you developed it according to the standard and do this certification test with this software. And this is headed by the Omlox working group testing. And then there's the last working group, which is always needed, which is the working group marketing. And they do basically do the communication.
And so one of the questions that I think everyone would want to know is, you know, how many products are there that conform to the standard? It's early days with regards to standards, but I'm assuming that test process needs to be completed in order for you to be able to say, oh, I've got, a thousand different products in these different categories that conform to the standard.
The real problem about that is, and I'm sure you're aware of that, that by competition laws, it's always strictly forbidden in this kind of standardization meetings to exchange any information about roadmaps, about pricing. There are really high fines on that, so you really don't do it. Which means officially nobody is allowed to know what the others are doing, which is also the case. So to be very clear, three weeks ago, there was Hannover Fair, and there I learned, POSIX is having this new kind of Omnox product. Then some other weeks ago, there was a conference in Denmark, and then a regional Siemens employee on the conference told, yes, we will come out with our Omnox products next year. So this is how I also officially collected it. Often you are in the working groups, you're not allowed to, and you never communicate it in there. Mm-hmm. So it's just like picking up on conferences where you understand, they do it. So the rest is guesswork. Yeah. On all the critical elements, what I see is, and that's the good thing, we have on every element, no matter if you're on the chip level, if you're on the module level, if you're on the hub level, we always have second sources. I think that's the good and very important thing. Again, I would expect that the variety of products being offered, I think the big amount will start in 2023.
Excellent. So, Epse, you are leading a very interesting division within a very large company with a lot of history. How did you get to your role?
Well, basically, it's because of I'm convinced of what I do. So it's I always liked to do what I love and what I do and what I feel is right to do. So I was never driven by money or career. And when Industry 4.0 came out and it started in Europe, at some point, I was totally convinced that the only way to make this real and make it happen is by to base it on open standards. And that when I start pushing open standards, and this was basically supported by our owner of the company of Trump, because he understood that we need those kind of open standards. And, well, I could dig a detail, but I don't want to do it directly at the first question. But long story short, at some point, we understood in order to get this open standard for location real, we have to do a little bit more than just ask others for doing it. And that's why we finally, at some point, decided to build this company where I'm now CEO of.
Well, you know, I live and work in California now. I grew up in England, as you can probably tell. But here, it seems like everyone's changing jobs. Well, I'm in San Diego, so people are changing jobs every 2 or 3 years. You go up into the Bay Area, it seems like people are changing jobs every year. You've been with Trump for a little bit longer than that. Tell us a little bit about that. Is that typical and more typical in Germany? Do people have more stable careers?
I think on one side, it's definitely more typical in Germany. That's part of it, yes. The other thing is that in which company you are and what do you feel what you can do. So let's put it that way. 30 years ago, I left a company which is called IBM. I was also working for IBM long ago. And at that time, I was in a small subsidiary of IBM nowhere in Germany. And whatever you do, there will be no one recognized it somewhere in the headquarter. Now, this time I'm with Trump, and this is a family-owned business. I'm located in the headquarter, and I'm directly reporting to the owner. So that's one thing which makes life easier, and that's a combination in which you can really do innovation on a long-term perspective. And the other thing is that I'm reporting to Peter Leibinger. And Peter Leibinger, he get, let's put it that way, the highest decoration you can get in Germany from government for innovation. And that's because he's really special. So he loves to support innovation, although there is uncertainty in it, as long as he likes the vision. And that's, for example, why in some ways Trump is unique for what we are doing. And let's say to directly report to such a person is just a wonderful combination to really drive groundbreaking innovations.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that. I think all of us are kind of looking to leave our mark, and you seem to have an incredible opportunity to do that. You're riding a wave which is changing the world, and you've got the ear of the family that controls the purse strings. You don't have to worry about shareholders, and so I think you're hats off to you. I think you've managed to engineer a great role. But let's talk a bit more about you on the personal side. What are the three songs that you selected that you would want to take on this long journey that we're sending you on?
Well, it's a real nice question. So I thought about it and I really came up with three nice songs. So one is Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams. So I'm sure they're very well known. For the simple reason, that's probably the song I was dancing for the most part of my life. Always using this song. Last, it was just some hours ago. The second one is Wind of Change from Scorpions. I'm not sure if this is well known in US. Scorpions is a German group. They make nice songs in English. And Wind of Change is basically a song about perestroika and glasnost. It's very important for when Germany became one company out of the two different companies. And this was nicely described in the song Mind of Change. And just at the moment, it looks like we are living in an area where the mind has changed again in the wrong direction, probably. But and that's another thing why I like this kind of song quite nicely. This was written at the end of the First Cold War. And the third song is something which is totally impossible that you know it. It's a German one. And anyway, I try to name it. It's called Eins kann mir keiner. And the group is Geier Sturzflug. You're sure you never heard about it. And the reason why I like it, I would put it that way, it's kind of a song you would nowadays describe as this is perfectly for resilience. So whenever you have a tough task for you and it will not take just enough energy for one day or one week or one month, but you probably need the energy for some years. It's the right, just the perfect song to listen to. And whenever you think about building up a global standard, I can promise you, you will need to have a lot of energy.
I can't believe that. I can believe it. Yeah, I've fantasized about these things. You're actually doing it, and I'm sure you're right. That's great. I love those choices. The Scorpions one is really thought provoking, given where we are, and hopefully, this world event seems to swing on a pendulum, and we're kind of in a bit of a scary place at the moment. But it's nice to be able to think back to a time when things seem to be resolving in a positive direction. Very good. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Well, this is great. Any key things that you think we should cover to give people kind of the 101, the first view of Omlox? It's been an eye-opener for me. Anything else we should cover before we wrap up?
Well, basically, like always, visit the site www.omlox.com, which is, I think, easy to remember. Mm-hmm. And whenever you have a question, just contact some of the Omlox members, and there's also a LinkedIn group and all those kind of things. And it's really open, and we welcome anyone to join.
Wonderful. Well, let's say I really appreciate your time. It's been fascinating. Trumpf is such a cool company. I'm glad I now understand a bit more about it. I think Omlox is a standard that's really needed, and I wish you the best. And we should probably talk offline about what Wiliot can do, but I think it's good work that you're doing, so well done.
Thank you.
So that was a lot.
Certainly changed my frame of reference, the way I think about real-time location systems. Some really interesting ideas on standardization, and something that I'm certainly going to be spending more time to learn about. Thank you for giving us your time, for staying through to the end. You're a part of the elite completer finisher group that does that. I look forward to talking to you again in our next podcast. As always, please tell your colleagues, anyone you think that could benefit from what we do. And until next time, stay safe.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.